ASN thanks Otsuka America Pharmaceutical Inc. for support of this podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Kidney Week 2021 Day One podcast. I'm Dr. Sue Quaggin, President of the American Society of Nephrology and Chief of the Division of Nephrology and Hypertension at Northwestern University in Chicago. I am absolutely delighted to be joined today by Dr. Catherine Tuttle. Dr. Tuttle, would you please introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. Hello, everyone. Kathy Tuttle here. I'm Executive Director for Research at the Providence Healthcare System, and I'm also a professor of medicine and nephrology at the University of Washington.
Well, the topic of our conversation today will be diabetic kidney disease, definitely a hot topic in the world of kidney health. And Kathy, I think we're going to go by first name basis because I know this is a topic you and I have both talked about quite a lot. It's a passion of both of ours, and I know it's of great interest to most, if not all, of the membership of our kidney community, the patients, the kidney care team providers, and the investigators. Before we start, I noticed you failed to add in a couple of your additional many credentials. You are boarded in both nephrology and endocrinology, and you are really a global leader in diabetes and diabetic complications, including diabetic kidney disease. I mean, you've devoted your career to advancing care for patients with diabetes and diabetic kidney disease, both through clinical care and also through your research. So I really am thrilled to have you here. Couldn't imagine a better person. You know, there's a lot going on at Kidney Week, and there's certainly a lot going on in diabetes with regards to diabetic kidney disease. I would love to know what you are most excited about in this arena right now.
Well, thanks, Sue. And I guess I will back up and say, for me, the journey really did start in diabetes. And when I was a fellow at WashU in St. Louis, doing a number of physiology studies, what was really clear to me is the patients I was recruiting for my studies actually had kidney disease. And as I got to know them and we developed relationships over time, long after the studies, it was really clear that what was hurting them most, frankly, was the complications, particularly kidney disease, which was really the reason that I went on to a fellowship in nephrology, because I was squarely focused on then applying physiology. In those days, we were studying renal hemodynamics to apply both metabolic and physiological principles to understand the mechanisms of diabetic kidney disease. So years ago, we were among the first people to do directly measured renal hemodynamics under conditions of glucose and insulin clamps in people with diabetes to really define, if you will, the physiology in humans, which was highly unusual at the time because most of it was micropuncture. But, you know, those studies now, the reason I'm mentioning them, besides just the historical context, is they've really set the stage for the new therapies. Understanding the hemodynamics is really critical to even the mechanisms for SGLT2 inhibitors, as well as ACEs and ARBs. And while there may be other mechanisms as well, it's clear that the hemodynamics are fundamental. So one of the things that I think, in addition to talking about the clinical data, is it's so important that we also stay focused on the science and unraveling the mechanisms, because they will eventually pay off to even more targeted therapies. That said, you know, it has been an incredible journey over the past 30 years to watch therapies evolve. And it was slow for a long time. But as we've been discussing over and over at this meeting, we've literally had an explosion of therapies over the past 5 years. So we are really entering a new paradigm, as you talked about in your opening president's address. We're already at the point that we have to focus on implementation, to move quickly from evidence to implementation, which I would say is a marvelous new problem to have in nephrology. We have things to implement, but it is really critical now that we get these therapies to patients if we want to make a difference.
Yeah, I think you bring up an excellent point. So I know you also are the chair of the Diabetic Kidney Disease Collaborative at ASN, and I know that implementation is one of the major areas of focus. So what can we do to help with implementation? And where do you see the levers, you know, at this point in time, so that we can really move these therapies that are so exciting and get them to the patients, to all patients who need them?
Yes, that's extremely important. And Sue, you were the one who was the inaugural chair of the Diabetic Kidney Disease Collaborative, and it's something that we and an expert group have been working on for, I guess, nearly 3 years now. And it really was born out of the observations from the clinical trials that we finally had therapies that were delivering for patients. And for the first time, you know, we have a big implementation lift. And I think the issue of implementation also came to light by the availability of real world data that showed us that we weren't even implementing ACE inhibitors and ARBs very well. But, you know, thank goodness we had the data, because otherwise I don't think we would have known. I think if you ask a typical clinician, they would say that, of course, they're using ACEs and ARBs in their patients appropriately. But remember that many patients are not treated by nephrologists or specialists. They're in primary care. These drugs get started and then they may be stopped and we don't even know they've been hospitalized and someone stopped the medicine. So I think that, you know, it was a moment where the real world evidence showed us we weren't even doing the sort of minimally effective therapies that we had available. And it was really a clarion call to change the landscape in order to implement new therapies. And of course, the first ones now labeled for diabetic kidney disease are the SGLT2 inhibitors, but we had finerenone, a non-steroidal mineralocorticoid antagonist, also receive a label based on highly compelling data this summer. So one of the things that we're focusing on in the DKDC is really, first off, getting the 360 on the whole room, inclusive of patients and clinicians, as well as academicians, and importantly, administrators and healthcare systems, about how we can do this. So education is a starting point. Speaking of education, there are a number of sessions at ASN for the nephrology audience, but one of the things we've also focused on is coming out of our silo and really intersecting with our companion specialties, particularly diabetes and cardiology, but also with primary care, where most people are receiving treatment for these conditions, at least at the point where they may be most effective. We have an educational module that we're developing that will launch soon after Kidney Week. We hope that it will certainly be used by the nephrology community, but also by these other communities as well. And we're making efforts to reach out to primary care, diabetes, cardiology organizations to collaborate on these educational efforts and also support theirs. You know, it goes both ways. And our effort, though, is squarely focused on the patient journey, too. We've really taken education in a direction where we walk alongside the patient and try to identify the points at which screening, detection, intervention should occur, and how, based on the evidence, those people would be optimally managed. But then it is beyond education, Sue, and one of the things that, of course, we're working on in the DKDC, along with our policy committee at ASN, is thinking about trying to work with federal agencies, particularly around health policy, to increase accessibility. And it harkens back to another thing you talked about in your presidential address. In order to implement therapies, we have to increase awareness and detection, and really sort of shifting a paradigm to kidney health, and that becomes our focus. And where kidney failure will still occur, but we are now really moving to an era where we can keep people alive and among the living prevent some of the devastating complications. And in nephrology, this is a new direction, moving to prevention.
Kathy, you brought up also an excellent point about collaboration early on and how important that is with our primary care providers, as well as with cardiology and endocrinology. And I wondered if you are seeing any of that realized in the real world, and, you know, what can we do to help implement some of these multidisciplinary approaches to patient care?
Well, I'll just give you a little personal anecdote in terms of the real world that I live in. I was actually invited to give cardiology grand rounds here locally last week and talked about the new therapies for diabetic kidney disease, but also, as we know, these therapies, particularly so far, dapagliflozin, are extending to non-diabetic CKD. And what we've seen is, particularly with the newer glucose-lowering agents, both SGLT2s and GLP-1s, is the heart protective effects is as equally profound as the kidney protective effects. And so I had the opportunity to present to our cardiology audience. And one of the really interesting things that came out of the discussion that ensued was we need to have a heart kidney clinic here. And fortunately, in cardiology, they have an amazing infrastructure on what they've called their advanced heart disease or heart failure programs, like I'm sure at many large clinical institutions. And so, you know, that actually provides some ideas about how we might structure these sorts of clinics. And the other thing that we agreed on is that we don't want to use that word failure anymore. Who wants to go to a clinic labeled failure? And that we really would like to name it something like the Heart and Kidney Function Clinic. But that sounds sort of bland. Maybe it's the Living Well with Heart and Kidney Disease Clinic or something like that. But we've already had the cardiologists basically say, you know, we have a lot of the infrastructure built. This ought to be a heart kidney clinic. And so I'm hopeful that for those of you who are listening, that you in your own areas of practice will be intersecting with these subspecialists. And of course, every place is different, but I would really encourage us to step out. And one of the cardiologists said it well, the Department of Medicine has reconvened.
Yeah, I think it's terrific. And I, you know, it's the same at our institution. We have fabulous partners in cardiology and endocrinology and primary care. And I think if we're really going to make an impact for patients, we all have to work together as a team. I know at Kidney Week this year, there are a lot of diabetes sessions, some focused on cardiorenal and multiple complications, as well as multiple other sessions with patient voice as well. Are there any sessions you're particularly excited about or any recommendations for the listeners?
One of my problems is I love everything. I'm really excited about the scientific presentations and the discoveries from the omics, as well as the sessions with the patient voice. I don't think you can go wrong with any of them. And if you all check out the learning streams, you can see the list of everything from basic science to implementation and patient voice. And honestly, I'd have trouble picking between them. That said, I do think the patient voice has really come on strong over the past several years. And I know that the patient voice has inspired all of us, and that even includes the basic scientists. And so perhaps those are really the most important because they get us set straight on whatever it is we're doing. And, you know, the patients have said over and over again, they've called for this holistic approach. They say, I don't come to clinic saying I'm a heart, I'm a kidney, I'm a spleen, I'm a liver, I'm a person. And that's what I would call us to, this higher calling of the more holistic view of a person. We might have special expertise with kidney disease, but it's really in the context of certainly their heart disease and their diabetes, but really whole person care. And I think that's another area that I would like to see our specialty embrace and really lead on in terms in medicine at large. And that brings up, you know, other important partners are really multidisciplinary teams in nephrology, especially pharmacists, nurses, and maybe even other forms of therapy. We haven't done that very much either in our field. And, you know, especially as we talk about the numbers of patients, again, you brought this out in your presentation, that who who would ideally be treated with these agents. You know, we do have a workforce issue, and I think we need to think about creative ways to partner with our healthcare professional colleagues across disciplines to get the job done.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, you bring up many excellent points. And I, you know, one of the benefits of a virtual meeting, even though we'd much rather be in person, is that we'll get to see all the content. So even if you miss something, it's available until January the 7th. So you'll be able to catch all of the diabetes sessions. I was going to come back to this point about back of the envelope calculations, and I did mention it and I didn't cite you. And I remember that you and I both had an opportunity last year to talk to the Assistant Secretary of HHS, and they actually reached out to the Diabetic Kidney Disease Collaborative because of this FDA, this you know, this breakthrough status for the Flozins. And I remember you and I had such a wonderful conversation and we're so excited. I mean, they were above, beyond excited. And I would love to see it. Clearly, this is a bipartisan issue. It, you know, affects everybody. So could you tell us or speak a little bit more about these back of the envelope calculations, which they asked you to provide? And also, you know, what would you say to anybody, you know, who holds some power in the government about why they should listen now and why, you know, they should make some changes?
Sure. So it is, again, as you pointed out, it's the pandemic playing in the background of COVID-19. But it's been here all along and for a long time. But if there is any gift from COVID, I think that as a society and a culture, that we're beginning to recognize the importance of science to solve big problems for patients and communities. And the problem of chronic kidney disease in general and diabetic kidney disease in particular has been that it's just largely been ignored next to the other major public health problems that have equal rates of fatality. And you pointed out the death rate on dialysis, and I guess I'll just back up and say that once GFR declines below 60 in a person with diabetes, the mortality rate increases progressively. So by the time they're at CKD4, we're looking at a mortality rate of nearly 20% per year. And that's on par with stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer. And I just bring that up for benchmarking. That's a very important problem. And I wholeheartedly support all efforts to improve cancer care. But why aren't we as urgent about this problem? Because people are just as likely to die. And I think part of it is, again, because our specialty clinically has been focused on such advanced disease, we really failed to recognize the mortality risk along the way to get there, that only 10% of people with diabetic kidney disease will ever make it to requiring dialysis or transplant. And that's not because they're living well, it's because the mortality rate is extraordinary. And, you know, when we focus so much at the end of kidney disease, we didn't see it for so long. And to me, that's a health justice issue. Talked about justice. And it's this case, it's a health justice issue by disease state. It certainly, again, intersects with other injustices related particularly to race and ethnicity and socioeconomic status. In fact, it's so intertwined, it's hard to even unravel that knot. But I think we really need to focus our efforts upstream. And that's where our discussions with Health and Human Services could be helpful. Meaning, I believe that we should have health policy that supports early identification and treatment and ideal care for people who are high risk And with early disease, when these fabulous therapies are most likely to save lives and preserve function, heart and kidney function. And it is going to take policy change. And of course, we need good therapies for people who do develop kidney failure. But can we imagine a world where that becomes plan B? And it is going to require, though, that that this work is rewarded and supported and resourced in a way that really helps patients. And that circles back to the other big issue, which is the patient voice is so important in this. And having patients being willing to tell their stories, to walk decision makers down their journey is really what I think it's going to take. But it's such an exciting time because when we think about the workforce and nephrology and earlier career people, who wouldn't want to identify and treat patients and save lives? I mean, this is really an exciting opportunity. So I'm wholeheartedly supportive of all of the ASN's efforts, and we'll do anything possible along with you and the leadership to work with our Policy Action Committee and legislators and Health and Human Services to see this to the finish line, because I think we have a moral and ethical obligation to do so.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, what you say about the patient voice is so, so true. And we've been so fortunate to have Patrick G on our collaborative, and, you know, the stories and his journey really bring home why we need to have change and why there's such an urgent need for change. So, but as you say, as we wrap up, you know, it is an incredibly exciting time. You've said it a number of times, you know, we're now at a point where we're going to have a menu of therapies and options for patients, not only to treat, you know, disease, but to prevent progression of disease, really prevent. And I think that's an incredibly, incredibly exciting time for our field. So how are we going to deal, or how do you think we're going to start to navigate through with this new menu of therapies?
Well, you know, I do think that the SGLT2 inhibitors, along with the ACEs and ARBs, are the standard of care. And I want to be clear about that. There's no doubt about it. It is now codified in every guideline from nephrology to endocrinology, diabetes, and heart disease. And so nephrologists, it's time to step up and learn how to use these agents effectively and safely. We do much more complicated things. There is no excuse to not be using them. We also need to bring implementation scientists onto our team to help us figure out the how to do that, but it's time to do it. I do, as we mentioned earlier, we now have finerenone that fits into the picture. GLP-1 receptor agonists are also there for the diabetic population in particular. Right now, even there's an indication for glucose control down to GFR of 15 with a reduction in hypoglycemia rates, half of that seen in insulin, and marked reduction in atherosclerotic CVD. So while we're waiting for the kidney disease trials with these agents, flow is being tested with semaglutide. We already have an indication now from a cardiovascular and a glucose-lowering perspective. And I think nephrologists, it's time for us to get comfortable managing diabetes again. I guess because I live in the diabetes and the nephrology world, I didn't realize that nephrologists had stepped away from managing diabetes, but I get told that over and over again. Maybe I'm dating myself, but you know, even when I pivoted from diabetes to nephrology, all the nephrologists were managing diabetes just fine. And I think it's not that hard to do. We do much more complicated things. And I think we need to get comfortable with using these agents. And also, that's a chance for us to step out and lead. Again, come out of our silo and be meaningful to the larger medical community, because we really have some expertise to offer other than just treating kidney failure. And it's use of these agents. And then this gets back to the science. And I encourage everyone to also listen to some of the really exciting basic discoveries, particularly now that we have a menu of therapies. We need to move toward more precision phenotyping. And that's where studies like the Kidney Precision Medicine Project, where protocol biopsies are being done and mapped to pathways and biomarkers. The aspirational goal is eventually then we'll be able to identify in a particular patient what are the mechanisms and have different therapy combinations and maybe different ones at different times, depending on where they are in their journey. So, you know, that's where I see the field going. But, you know, it's a time to not be comfortable with your old skills. And it's a time to step up, though, and learn new things. What's more fun than learning? And then step into leadership positions and lead the charge wherever you are, whether you're in science or clinical care or you do both. There's no more important work for us to do right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, I will say that I am very encouraged by the residents and even medical students and fellows who really are stepping up and prescribing these in their longitudinal clinics. So, you know, I think the future is incredibly bright for our field. Are there any priorities that you see for research or for clinical care that we haven't touched on today?
Well, I guess I'll just reiterate two things, and that is now that we have therapeutic opportunities, the dimension of science that we've largely missed is implementation science. We need that as part of the portfolio. And I would argue from the very beginning of trials, because one of the problems with translating trials to practice is they've been done in very artificial environments, which leads to some of the barriers in uptake. So we need to think about new ways to do trials. And then I would argue even closer work with the basic science community to help them understand really what the unmet needs are. Because, you know, as a basic scientist yourself, there are many really interesting questions. But which ones might really deliver something someday that could make life better for a patient on a journey, and where we become a more integrated and cohesive scientific community, where we're really including all of these voices. And then again, really thinking of ourselves as multidimensional professionals and building out, you know, like, let's say, heart, kidney, diabetes, comprehensive programs that include a whole team, pharmacists, educators, nurses, all of whom can play a really important role on delivering the right treatment to the right patient at the right time, with the ultimate goal of really why we went to medicine to begin with is to keep people alive and among the living, to let people enjoy a quality of life where they can do what they want and what they came here to do.
Kathy, I want to thank you most of all for joining me today. I want to thank you for sharing your insight, your expertise, for everything that you do and have done over the course of your amazing career to advance care for patients, both through investigation and clinical care. Thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing you around Kidney Week later on this weekend. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
ASN thanks Otsuka America Pharmaceutical Inc. for support of this podcast.